What other stuff did you bring that musically did you bring with you that you wanted to let us know about?
Well, let's see. There's a I brought a recording. There's actually two tracks from a live recording that the trio did in Paris a few years back, actually. But it was came out quite well for Radio France from a club in Paris. And I'm currently doing a project with the web-based company ArtistShare.com.
Yes.
Yeah. Maria Schneider has done a project for them, and several other people are doing projects. So I'm making that available as our Artist Share is a way to that fans can fund a recording, a project, and depending on what level of funding they give, they can get mentioned in the CD as silver participant or gold participant. And for, depending on their level of involvement, they get all these perks, like tons of downloads and live gigs and
cool
interviews. And if they're musicians and they're interested in sheet music and charts and all kinds of, different correspondence and stuff like that. So anyway, this concert is one that I've made available on the web.
Nice.
And I brought two tunes. I think one is the Anniversary Waltz, which is a song that I learned with Roy Haynes, the great drummer. So I played that with his group, and I was sort of fiddling around with it one day, and I just started reharmonizing it, putting different bass notes. And so it's turned into something that I enjoy playing, and I've brought it into different bands. I played it with Al Foster and his band. I worked with some, and we play it as a trio kind of feature. And some people think it's corny, but I kind of like it. I remember we were playing it at the Village Vanguard recently with Al Foster's group, and the owner of the club, Lorraine Gordon, had some comments, something to of the nature of, "Don't bring that bar mitzvah music in here."
Too bad she didn't have an opinion about it.
Something like that, yeah. Yeah, she's a funny lady. So I brought that, and then, gosh, I'm blanking on the other one I brought. I wish I had the paper in front of me.
Is it What Survives?
What Survives, exactly. Which is the title track from a self-produced CD that I put out a couple years ago. And it's a live version of that. So I don't know, maybe we can sneak in a clip or clip and a half of each of those. I don't know.
All right. So tell me a little bit about What Survives. What is it that that made you want to bring that, you know, to our attention? And what is it that comes out in that talks about you?
Well, What Survives is from a Rainer Maria Rilke poem, the German poet. And it came out of that song sort of evolved and had different incarnations for me. Basically, I just sat down one night with this book of his poetry and opened it up. And I hit record and on my tape player at home in Brooklyn at the time I was living, and basically improvised it through, you know, singing this lyric into the microphone and coming up with a melody. And it actually had very little, I made some changes to it, but it was pretty much just kind of came that way, you know.
Wow.
Just kind of put it together. And then from there, I was making a record with working on some music with my friend Seamus Blake for a band that would become called the Sangha Quartet. And we did a couple of tours with myself and Seamus and Larry Grenadier on bass and Bill Stewart. We wound up doing a record, and we came up with this little – actually, I'd come up with this odd meter vamp. And I thought, well, it'd be interesting to put this crazy, in some ways, atonal melody over this, and these chords over this ostinato vamp, you know. So we wound up recording it there, and I recorded it in a different way on my trio record. I've played it as a ballad. I've played it. In fact, it's on this other recording that I brought down with my friend Eli DeGibri, Israeli saxophone player who I've been playing with Al Foster a bit, and we made a duo record recently.
Mm-hmm.
And on that one, I actually sing on that one. And so it's kind of keeps popping up.
Cool.
In this version on the live from Paris... it's in the form of this ostinato, this vamp, and playing this long melody over the top of it and then improvising. It also includes, I've messed around a little bit with effects, electronic effects on the piano, and I had my little box of tricks with me on that tour, this particular trio tour that this recording is from. And I use some of that as kind of a crazy distortion thing, you know, which I was having fun with.
How did you end up in New Mexico?
Well, I guess about 2003, late in 2003, I, to be honest, was feeling a little burned out from New York and the scene and the kind of grind, you know. I was on the road a lot, and I just needed a break. So I took one, and I wound up out here. And I even had this sense, you know, before I moved here, that I said, you know, something about this sounds right to me. It just feels like, yeah, I think I'm going to like it there. I'd never been, you know.
Okay.
And as soon as I got here, you know, and I saw one sunset, I was like, and I saw the way the light hit the mountains, you know, and I just thought, I think this is really for me, you know.
Yeah.
And so I basically picked up and moved, you know, and I'd lived on the East Coast my whole life, in cold, damp weather, biting New York cold, East Coast, you know, New England and New York. And so, you know, I didn't even really know quite what to expect. I didn't actually expect to be playing much out here. I didn't know what. I didn't know anybody. A friend of mine from New York, alto saxophonist John Gordon, who I'd worked with and kind of grew up with around, you know, after high school, gave me the number of a local drummer up in Santa Fe, John Trenacosta.
Right.
And so I contacted John, and we worked a little bit together at this old burrito place up in Santa Fe, you know, and it was great, you know. And
nice.
Just getting moved in and found a little guest house. And
how long ago was that?
So basically I've been here for about 2.5 years now.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's great.
When we've talked with other musicians, you know, another thing that comes up is the question of what else is in your life besides the music, and what's the connection between your own human experience and how it's transferred to your performance. Do you ever think about that, or do you know what I'm asking?
Oh, absolutely.
For?
I mean, in a lot of ways, I don't know what's typical in terms of the experience of, as I think everyone's just unique, you know, in the way that they develop and they grow and in their music making and in their life. But for me, I actually don't separate, you know, my musical development as with my development as a human being, you know. In fact, I feel like in some ways some of the most when I've had sort of growth spurts or musically have often coincided with my human existence, you know, my growth as a human being, you know. In fact, there's been times where I've suspected that that's the more important part, you know, but I really
are those moments accidental, or is that something that you're working on?
Well, it's something you work on.
Okay.
Yeah. But then, you know, you can't yank a flower out of the ground, you know. It kind of has to do its thing, and you just try to nurture it, you know. But I am increasingly of the belief that we're human beings first, you know, and musicians second, you know, or, you know, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and to a large extent, my moving out to New Mexico was a bit of a search in that way. Perhaps because I was finding myself at a bit of a loss on some levels, you know, in terms of filling in those human gaps, you know, around relationship and the more reflective arts,
mm-hmm, sure.
You know, and finding myself in some ways increasingly distracted by the comings and goings of New York, including my own, you know, in terms of being on the road and the back and forth and you know, being involved in different people's bands and stuff like that. as much as I enjoyed doing that, you know, finding that maybe I needed to do some searching within myself to say, well, you know, is this the way I want to live? Is this you know, those reassessing times that we all go through where we say, let me just take a break here and see, you know, is this the path that feels right to me, you know? And I think since moving to New Mexico and having the space and the quiet and that time to explore these other things, I'm certain it's influenced the music. You know, I'm still a jazz musician. You know, it's funny. I mean, I've had people say to me, you know, well, you know, you're leaving that all behind or something like that. And that's not true. You know, you don't just shed that kind of, I mean, at least I don't. I don't know. Maybe other people do.
It's always with you.
It's with me, you know, yeah. And I cherish it. You know what I mean? And I'm a jazz musician, you know. When it comes down to it, at the end of the day, I mean, in terms of what I love to do, I mean, it may express itself in different ways. I mean, I made this solo record that I've been, you know, accused of it being new age or something. You know, I don't know exactly what they mean, but, you know, at heart, you know, that's, you know, this is where I came from, and I have certain things, musical needs or something, you know, whether it's rhythm or something that just seems to need to be there no matter how it may come out ultimately stylistically. But, you know, I'm certainly aware that the desert has its effects.
Yeah, let me ask you, though, is there a track of music that when you listen to it, you could say, this is New Mexico calling, or... This wouldn't have happened if I'd stayed in New York.
You know, I think on some level that this solo record, Open Range, that I just, you know, just came out. I mean, it's certainly packaged that way, and I don't disagree with it. You know, and it's fine, and it's sort of a theme, you know, record and.
What do you mean it's packaged that way? Just because?
Well, I mean the liner note. I mean, you know, yeah. The liner notes indicate that, and I was very conscious of, you know, choosing titles, and the fact is that most of the record is improvised. You know, and it just seemed like an appropriate fit. You know, I mean, it is a different experience waking up, you know, on a mountain top in the high desert than it is in a basement apartment in Park Slope, Brooklyn. You know, with a car alarm going off. I mean, those are two distinct experiences, and they've had an effect. You know, it doesn't mean this is the direction or anything that my music. I mean, because I do different things. You know, but I, you know, I'm not uncomfortable with the label of jazz musician. In a way, you know, at times I have been because I haven't always liked what certain people maybe represent that as, you know, or it can get boxed. You know, you can get boxy with it. And I'm proud to call myself one. At the same time, I don't feel like it's a badge that I have to wear to prove to anyone that, you know, I have done my homework or something, or that I, you know...
Well, most of the real greats are completely out of the box people, aren't they?
In a sense, yeah. I mean, it's a funny thing, you know. It's
they're risk takers and
exactly.
They're experimenters and
exactly.
They aren't afraid to fail or be seen as failing.
And you know, that's jazz.
Yeah,
you
right.
know,
it's life.
That's life, and that's the adventure of, you know. I mean, that's this. I mean, jazz is really unique in that way. You know, I think. I mean, it's really it doesn't exist in that way, you know, anywhere else. And I mean, I remember having a really wonderful experience in Japan. I mentioned before about this jazz, Mount Fuji Jazz Festival, and they had one of their festivals was devoted to celebrating the life of Herbie Hancock. You know, it was the We Love Herbie Festival. You know, mm-hmm. And I had the opportunity to share the stage with him and play with him.
He was there.
Yeah. And to hang out with him a little bit, you know, and this was around the time, well, maybe a little bit after, I forget what year that was, but when the film Round Midnight came out with Dexter Gordon, the jazz film, you know, and Herbie was, like, I think, the musical director for that. And you know, in talking to him, realizing how much he felt honored for being, first of all, to being chosen to kind of represent jazz in a way, you know, there was, and how proud he was to be a part of this tradition, you know, be part of this, you know, this chain. And, I was just so struck by, you know, his humility and at the same time, and you know how open he is. I mean, going venturing into funk and pop and different stuff, but he's a jazz musician. You know, I mean, ultimately, when it comes down to it, that's, you know, I don't, and to hear someone, kind of unapologetically just say, you know, I have no problem with that label. It's, I'm proud, you know, to have that, and doesn't mean I have to play what one person over here thinks is jazz one, you know, one day and not the other day. I do, you know, and maybe on some level my move was sort of like, okay, you know, I don't have to prove anything anymore, you know, and you know, New York has that element to it, and that can be potentially distracting or I think harmful to an artist if you get too caught up in just burning. and you know, there can be that kind of energy there. I think in some ways it's changing, but because it's not as conservative, I think, as it was, mm-hmm. you know, it's opened up a tremendous amount. Whereas, you know, whatever. I mean, the press, of course, is the last to come along for the ride, you know. But I've noticed that guys are more inclined to do what they want to do. And I think in some ways less feeling like they have to prove themselves, you know. Now, there's something also that I feel very fortunate in that the time that I went to New York, that I had the experiences that I did, you know, that perhaps, you know, well, I'm sure, you know, added to my arsenal or whatever, you know, as a jazz musician. And I feel very fortunate that, you know, when that I've had the opportunity to play with musicians of a music of when it was in its heyday, you know, it's very, I feel really blessed for that, you know. I wouldn't trade that, you know, for anything.
So finally, what else is important in your life besides jazz when you're not composing, playing? What's a peek at Kevin Hayes' life?
Right now, it's living, you know, with all the craziness that's going on in the world. Just trying to be a good man, a good person, you know, live well, to live responsibly, to try and be of service, you know, at whatever level I can be, musical or otherwise. With the people that are in my circle, you know, my friends, because life is short. And so I'm increasingly, you know, I've had my share of, you know, worrywartism And, you know, you pick that up pretty good in New York. You know, always seems to be something to worry about, you know, whether it's how's my career going or where's the money. And, you know, I mean, these are, perhaps you don't have to be in New York to experience that, but there's a certain edge, you know. You know, I enjoy watching film and reading and, you know, and doing some hiking and going up to Ojo Caliente and going for a soak in the mineral baths. And, you know, I paint a little bit. I draw. I write. You know, I've been writing some lyrics and been singing a little bit more. And just, you know, enjoying life. So it's less... It's, as we know, it's less hectic out here. Mm-hmm. And there seems to be a little more time for that, for living, oddly enough. You know, I mean, there's been times when I've toyed with the idea of, well, I wonder if I would move back to New York, or I don't think I would move back to the city. If I were to move, it probably wouldn't be in the city. You know, but, you know, I still have many friends, you know, back east, and I get to see them. You know, I go back there every couple months to do a recording or to play some gigs and visit and go to our favorite restaurants, you know. And, you know, whenever I go to Brooklyn, I give my friend Bill Stewart a call, and we say, are we going to go to Aldi La, our favorite Italian restaurant, yeah, which is right on the corner where I used to live in Brooklyn. It's the best northern Italian food in the city,
yeah,
you know. And you know,
well, half your friends in New York probably wonder how you could have left, and half of them just can't believe your good fortune at finding this spot. So
I've had mixed responses, you know. It's interesting, and you know, it's not easy to make that kind of move, you know. So far, I have no regrets, you know.
Well, I wish you continued good living.
Thank you.
And Kevin Hayes, thanks for visiting with us.
Thank you.